Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Irreversible split. This is probably the most accurate way to describe Russia's relationship with the West today. But this did not have to be. The West's attempts to cripple the Russian economy have failed, as well as the attempt to isolate Russia. The West has isolated itself. Crosstalking Russia's relations with the West, I'm joined by my guest, Michael Maloof in Washington. He's a former Pentagon senior security policy analyst. In Corpus Christi, we have Michael Flanagan. He is president of Flanagan Consulting and a former congressman. And here in Moscow, we have Maxim Suchkov. He is the director of the Institute of International Studies at Moscow State Institute of International Relations. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, Michael, in Washington, D.C., let me go first. I want to ask all three of you the same question. Do we have any irreversible split in Russia-West relations? Go ahead, Michael in Washington.
Peter, I think we do. And I think it is something that the United States brought on itself and the West, for that matter, but at the urging and pushing of the United States, particularly the Biden administration and the neoconservatives who are in it, like Victoria Nuland. This is an effort and a purposeful effort by them to contain and ultimately have regime change in Russia. And I think that this was the catalyst for Mr. Putin to say, okay, enough's enough, because the United States just pushed Moscow to its own limits, and in so doing, pushed the European countries to follow suit reluctantly. They did, and already we're seeing splits there. But this is something where Moscow now is looking to creation of a new multipolar world order, as I see it, along with China, and Iran, Turkey, and all the other members of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization and the BRICS countries. So I see that this is an irreversible trend, and I don't think it's a bad thing. I think it's going to get them out from under the Western financial system dependency, and also create an entirely different economic order that is going to be more constructive than destructive that we've seen on the part of the United States over the past 20 years.
Okay, Michael Flanagan, the same question to you, irreversible split. And in Michael Maloof's opinion, this is basically a good thing. I tend to agree with him. Your thoughts, my friend?
Well, I'm furious, Peter. You need to come to me before Michael Maloof, because we agree on most things, but I need to say it first. Michael is correct in most things, but I disagree slightly in the ultimate impact. We need to have a multipolar world. I think that that is an absolutely good thing. When you have a bipolar world, I mean that in its definitional sense, not in its pharmaceutical sense. You have everyone is either for you or against you, and you can't view the world in that light. There has to be room for neutrality or indifference to dealing with its own problems. And so I believe we've baited Russia over the years, but then Russia's reaction, I think, is also extreme. Perhaps not to the Russian point of view, but to most other people's. But it's predictable, and that's the problem. We need to move away from a bipolar world to a multipolar world. And you'll find even in the writings of President Eisenhower, not General Eisenhower, but President Eisenhower, was very skeptical of remaining in NATO and thought it would be a very good idea if we ended the organization once its real purpose of being able to fight back Nazism was over. And a resurgence of Nazism. So it's to continue to view the world of you love me or you hate me is crazy. We have to be able to allow it to do it behave in its own independent, in its own best interests, provided it doesn't leave its borders. And I think, you know, the real pain in the world, the real pain that's coming is from China, and to drive Russia away from its European friends, its ancient European capacity to its Eastern capacity is unhelpful. It's stupid. It's insane. But it's Joe Biden. A man is a walking disaster, foreign policy wise, and always has been. This is not a surprise. So I pray that we get through this well,
yeah,
and that we can work together again.
Yeah, it's not a surprise, but it's very predictable at the same time. And I think this is a bipartisan thing. I mean, I agree with your criticism of Biden, for sure. But, I mean, it's bipartisan. Yes. Okay.
You're correct.
Maxime, you know, the same question to you, and I wanted to have a little extra caveat for you in the situation with Kaliningrad. I mean, again, I mean, just increasing the escalation of tension right here. I mean, Russia had agreements with Lithuania, with the European Union about transport of cargo and people, and now that is being, the ante is being up there. I mean, this is why I'm calling the program Irreversible Split. I mean, this is intentional increasing of tensions here. Go ahead, Max.
Well, look, a few things I would want to mention. First, I think getting hegemony or monopoly is bad for the hegemon or monopolists in the first place. I mean, it's good for them in the short run, but ultimately it's bad in the long run. And I think the unrivaled dominance of the United States for the course of almost two decades has ultimately weakened America, not just strengthened America. So what we're seeing now, I agree with my colleagues in the sense that we do need a little more polycentric world that we have now. Ultimately, I think the current divorce that we're seeing is going to weaken both the West and Russia, and that is not necessarily a good thing for either actor in the sense of that they will be weaker in facing other challenges, not just from, you know, quote-unquote non-Western powers, but also, you know, other transnational challenges. There will be no cooperation between Russia and the West, and in that sense, I think it's a loss for both. I think whether this split is irreversible, it looks like it's going to be long term, but ultimately I think it will change because what Putin has basically warned the West against is that the current establishments are conducting the policies that will ultimately bring to power the people who would smash them, and that may entail in some change in the Western attitude. What I think may be good for Russia is that over the past few years, there was a certain gap in the West between the leadership in technology and the certain trends in their value system. So for Russia, you know, being disentangled from the technological aspect is, in my view, bad, but disentangled from the value system is, I think, ultimately good.
Michael, in Washington, I mean, you've already kind of alluded to it here. I mean, when we look at these sanctions and all that, I mean, and they still haven't fully impacted Russia. I want my audience to understand that. I mean, it's not a bed of roses here, and there's a lot of predictions in third and fourth quarter things will deteriorate with the Russian economy. However, having said that, I mean, the impact is very real and very painful on Western polities, on Western consumers. Here. I mean, it's almost to the point of just irrational. You want to cut off Russia from everything that has to do with the West, but it's self-inflicted wounds. It's really extraordinary to witness. Michael in Washington.
Yeah, I think it's backfired on the United States, as I said earlier. I think that this is something that clearly Moscow and it has basically veered more Eurasian. In the Eurasian direction, and it has picked up other friends. I don't think it's isolating itself. I think it's creating this brand new opportunity in addition to a world order that is going to occur. And actually, the ruble has strengthened as a result of the sanctions. It hasn't weakened, and we're seeing that there are some difficulties within the Russian economy. Sure, but. Your gas prices and everything else are relatively stable, and you're seeing that the economy in the West, however, has suffered tremendously, and I think it's backfired. And you're going to see the European countries already, which are fracturing in terms of their unity, beginning to look more eastward. They are exporting countries, and they're right up they're in the neighborhood, in effect, and they're going to look more closely to Russia and to the east. Look, the one of the first benchmarks of this transfer to a multipolar world order, which has many definitions, by the way, is something that began in May of 2018 when Trump dropped out of the JCPOA. I happened to be in Iran the week that that happened, and you could just sense that something tremendous had happened, that there's going to be a major shift as a consequence between East and West. And it actually has occurred, and it's built upon that, and it has improved upon that. So you have the SCO, you have the BRICS, as I said, you have the Eurasia Economic Cooperation Group coming together, and all of these are going to form an approach in the world that's going to be much greater in terms of population and in terms of thrust than we see in the West. And you're going to see Western countries beginning to peel off and look to them because they, as exporting countries, they need those markets in the East, and they're going to be looking that in that direction.
You know, Michael in Corpus Christi, what I fully expect is a doubling down of everything. So the sanctions didn't work. So what else is going down here? I mean, there's a discursive problem here. Russia must not win. That's the mantra in the West. But it should have been we need peace and peace for everyone. And they continue to say no. Russia can't win, and that's almost putting Ukraine as a footnote to all of this. 1 minute before we go to the break here, Michael in Corpus Christi.
You have to really understand the real motives of Biden and his son Hunter, the Soros crowd, the Kerrys, the Clintons. There's more going on here than just the geopolitical needs of two great nations fighting over a third. And that has to be examined thoroughly and far beyond the topic we have here to talk about. Biden will impotently throw tons of money at the Beltway Corridor here in Washington, at the arms makers, in an effort to try and have some of it trickle into Ukraine. It won't work, but that's all he can do.
Well, Maxime, real quick here. I mean, the expectation, are you saying this this split could be generational? 10 seconds, my friend. Sorry for so little time. 10 seconds.
I think it might be. It may also have to be with generations of certain politicians, of both here in Moscow and in Washington, D.C.
All right. Okay. Well, that was a great way to end the first part of the program here. Gentlemen, we're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on Russia's relations with the West. Stay with RT.
Sri Lanka has become the first Southeast Asian country in 2022 unable to pay its foreign debt. This totals $51 billion.
Even during the war, we didn't face such an economic challenge.
This is the main protesting place in this Gotagogam village. That means Gotagogo village.
The sanctions imposed by Western countries against Russia have brought this island nation to its knees. Oil prices have skyrocketed, as have petrol, medicine, and food.
Fertilizer price has gone up 200%.
Thousands of people took to the streets, and this is just the beginning. A similar scenario could unfold in Bangladesh, Nepal, Pakistan, and other Asian countries in Africa.
Есть мнение американских политологов, что именно Индийский океан станет центральной ареной противостояния в 21 веке.
Они повыгоняли всех людей из домов, загнали в подвалы. И танки начали стрелять.
Подошел Азов, попросили копать окопы. Люди их послали, и через 10 минут туда полетели, где было 100 человек, просто снаряд.
И молотит, и молотит. Бум! Через секунду, две-три, бум!
А это через полчаса.
Резко, резко, резко! Быстрее, быстрее, быстрее!
Вот моя дочка, а рядом девочка оладики жарила в одну яму, их похоронили, вот.
На маяке украинские были, оттуда прилетели.
Более 400 тысяч человек, находящиеся в Мариуполе, просто ушли под землю, потому что их не выпускали из города.
Добивайте их уже, господи, мы уже не купили сюда. Вот так.
Отходите, кто хлеб еще не получил.
Спасибо всем, кто обогрел и накормил, отмыл. За поддержку, за переживание, за сочувствие.
С нуля я живу. Я надеюсь, что этих гадов выбью. Найду мать.
Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing Russia's relations with the West. Okay, let's go back to Max here in Moscow. A few days ago in St. Petersburg, Vladimir Putin gave a speech to an international crowd. And it was quite strident. I mean, for most of us that listened to it and read it later, it's very akin to the 2007 speech that he made in Munich at the security confab there. What did you take it from it? Because it was quite strident, and it was basically saying, the West is not interested in a relationship with us, so we're not interested in having a relationship with the West. No more of this cancel culture. We don't care anymore. And we go to Foreign Minister Lavrov. I think it was to the BBC. He's saying, you know, the question from the questioner was, you know, in Western eyes, and he said, I don't care about your eyes. I mean, and Lavrov doesn't usually speak that way, okay? I mean, that's why I'm calling it irreversible split. I mean, they're basically saying we're done talking. We're going to move forward in a direction that we feel is best for our sovereignty. Do you think that's a fair summation of Putin's speech, Max?
Well, to me, the speech was a kind of a progress speech, and in a way, urbi et orbi, as they say, you know, so everyone could find anything for themselves in the part that was hard, that some thought resembled more like a Federal Assembly address, because it had, you know, he spoke a lot about the kind of the national development and certain support programs in the new reality. There were parts that where he was talking about his vision, you know, forging new partnerships for Russia outside the West. But most of all, I think it was about his vision for the future of Russia and the international system, because he was talking, his speech, you know, you mentioned the Munich speech of February 2007. That speech, in my view, ended the era of 1990s, Russia's relationship with the West. Today's speech ended the era between Russia and the West that emerged after that, you know, the summation of all the crises, of all the problems. And it wasn't threatening in any way. It was more kind of a fatigue. You know, you could sense the fatigue. So basically saying, okay, you want to, you know, follow this path, we'll let you follow this path. But, you know, the warning is that the elites, the current elites, will be smashed by what you guys call, you know, the populists, but they will be not populists, but, you know, people who will run on a certain ticket from the people who are disgruntled with your own policies. But it's up to you. We're going to go about our own business and with new partnerships. So to me, it was a program speech. We'll see how it gets implemented into practice.
Michael, in Washington, I mean, if we can turn our attention to what's going on in Ukraine, there is no way in the world Ukraine can win a conflict, a military conflict with Russia. That's just the facts, okay? Irrespective of the drumbeat of propaganda that is constantly being spewed out. But what is the Biden administration going to do? I mean, how do you explain defeat? Because that's what it's going to be. And then we have the European Union talking about, you know, potential candidacy for Ukraine. What Ukraine are they talking about, okay? I mean, all of this white noise here, and it's avoiding realities on the ground. War is always awful. I'm not happy that there is a war. Don't get me wrong here, okay? But it will come to an end. How is the West going to react to that, particularly the United States, particularly the Biden administration? Go ahead, Michael, in Washington.
Well, I think with the Biden administration, Ukraine is just a cog. It's just a means to an end, to an ultimate goal of trying to contain, as I said, Russia and to obtain regime change. It just happened to be Ukraine this time. And the problem is that Ukraine war is becoming much greater, and the United States, particularly the Biden administration, has no policy. It doesn't know what it wants to do. It's being reactive, and there is no end game to this. And this is the problem that we're seeing. Now we're seeing behind the scenes a little bit of trying to get Zelensky, the president of Ukraine, to look, try to come to terms, and because you're not going to win, you're not going to take back Crimea, you're not going to take back the South. So he's being relentless, and he thinks that these arms and what have you are going to be coming in for good, and it's just not going to happen. The United States doesn't have all that material, and in fact, its own supplies are dwindling, and we're having to backfill the Europeans who reluctantly are supplying goods to Ukraine. So nobody has a plan. It's just all being reactive, and I think at some point here in the very near future, they're going to have to come to reality and figure out just where we're going to be going with this policy, because Russia is gaining, and it's going to be gaining more and more in the east now that the war has shifted in that direction. And I think basically Moscow can, in effect, declare victory because it has achieved what it ultimately wants to do, and that is to create the land bridge between Donbas region and Crimea, and also to neutralize Ukraine from becoming a member of NATO. And I think that this is what Putin wants to do. He wants to set up a buffer in the West so he can look more eastward. And I think he has basically told the West that they'll maintain relations, but on a minimal basis. But it's not going to be the robust looking westward that they used to have. It's going to be much more eastward. And that's the direction things are going. That's just the reality of it. And Ukraine is just a means to an end.
Michael in Corpus Christi, how do you react to what we just heard from Michael in Washington?
Michael is astute and observant as always, but you have to understand the Russian psyche just a little bit. And I don't pretend with you, particularly with you, Peter, who's lived in Russia for decades.
And Maxine.
And our friend at the, and our friend at the Strategic Institute. I'm not going to challenge you with that, but you don't have to read a lot about Marshal Suvorov or others to understand the Russian art of war, which is, you know, people think, well, the art of war is the same the year world over. It is not. The art of war in the United States, 10% casualties in a unit. I spent some time in the military. 10% casualties in a combat, a large maneuver unit, makes a combat ineffective. It must be withdrawn. It can't function. Not so with the Russian military. There's a greater acceptance of blood. I'm sorry to put it that way, but it's true. And the art of war is more about the soldier than about the technology. You know, they don't need our toys. They can quite capably handle this matter. And they are quite capably handling it in the slow, plodding, hub-to-hub, rolling artillery way that any reasonable military person could have expected and predicted. Unfortunately, we have a Pentagon filled with woke, I would not have said this until recently, but incompetent generals. I mean, for whatever their politics, we always believed they were competent. I don't believe that's true anymore. I think we have real idiots over there. And if they can support the regime with lies about how well Ukraine is doing, well, Joe Biden is walking a gangplank to a place where he's got to announce we didn't win. And what is that going to look like?
That is in the wake of Kabul also, okay?
Yes, exactly.
You know, Michael, you know, not only are they incompetent, I know why they're incompetent, because they're just angling for the payout when they finish working at the Pentagon. They're looking for a board at Boeing and et cetera. That's the game plan. You know, Tony Blair invented it for everybody, okay? Public service is just ticking the box. Maxime, let me go to you here in Moscow. This conflict in Ukraine will come to an end. I absolutely believe it'll be on Russia's terms and Russia's timetable. But Russia will be, for a very long time, maybe a generation, at war, and in one sense of the word or another, with NATO. Agree or disagree?
Oh, I totally agree with you. More so, I think we are at war with NATO and the United States in particular at this very moment, because what happened, and I think it happened in a way gradually and tacitly, and you know, my conversations with some of my colleagues in the West suggest that there was little appreciation of that fact, that the United States has basically walked this through this red line of not contributing to a direct killing of the Russian soldiers in Ukraine, you know, and by providing data and intelligence to the Ukrainian military that contributes to the killing of the Russian military personnel and, you know, warships and other, you know, materiel and personnel, is actually a violation of this kind of unspoken rule that was only, you know, in place during some hot conflicts in the Cold War, you know, in Korea and Vietnam and Afghanistan, but was never the case after the end of the Cold War. Now we're going back to this worst practices of the Cold War. And there is one thing that I think everyone has to bear in mind, that there is no such thing as proxy war. They're never singular. They will always will be plural, you know, and for every killed Russian soldier or general, there might be a retaliation, and not necessarily direct retaliation, you know, but, and to be clear, I'm not advocating for that. I'm just, you know, raising this as a serious concern that is on the path for how this confrontation may look like, you know, in this spiraling confrontation. And that's very unfortunate.
Michael, in Washington, how has NATO acquitted itself so far in this conflict, okay? Because I always have to bring it up. On December 17th, the Russians communicated to NATO and to the United States what could possibly happen if they didn't listen to their security needs. Security is indivisible. How does NATO, how has it acquitted itself so far? Real quick, 1 minute to you.
Well, I don't think it's done very well, and I think that you're not going to see a war between NATO and Russia in the long term. You may see skirmishes, you may see disputes, but Europe cannot afford to go to war with Russia. They have seen how Russia conducts its warfare. It's just total obliteration. And Europe cannot put up with that. As it is, it's going to take him years to recover just from what they've been going through. And I think that we're going to be seeing Russia and NATO, even though it's going to be rocky, I think they will not go to war ultimately, but will have disputes.
Okay, Michael in Corpus Christi, we have 25 seconds here. Do you see Article 5 being invoked this year by NATO?
No, I don't. I think we'll sit on Lithuania, we'll sit on Poland, and we'll make sure that nothing much comes of that, the sable rattling going on there. They may think they're prescient, but they're not. They're defending a bad, bad, bad policy that caused Russia to behave in a bad way. And this, our friend from the Strategic Institute is absolutely correct, Maxime. We have to take a step back. Countries go on forever, and we will get back together again. But we've been harmed by the behavior of NATO and the reaction by Russia right now, and we've got to take a step back from that, and we will.
I hope we will take a step back, everyone here. That's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Washington, Corpus Christi, and Moscow. And I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, crosstalk rules.